Hello, everyone, and good morning, good afternoon, and to some good evening. I am your host, Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. If you are new to the channel, please hit like, please hit subscribe, and do not forget to hit that notifications bell as we are constantly adding new programming to the channel all the time, constantly doing cross streams with other channels. Just recently did the Sublation magazine launch, 6 hours. Also, we've been doing patron-only cross streams with Ben Burgess before he went off on his hiatus at the end of his third season. If you want to hear some of these cross streams that we did with, you know, Ben, and we've done some with Doug and Sublation, the best way to do it is become a patron. Patreon.com/Bitter Lake Presents. And for as little as $30 a year, for the whole year, you get access to the VIP champagne room. You get to have the monthly movie night. And also, you get to be part of the VIP call-in show. And we're going to try a little bit today. Definitely for patrons, the numbers should be up in Patreon, and I'll give you guys the sign for when we're set up for the calls. But we're going to take some calls today, so if people can see how the call-in show works. I think it's fun. The call-in part of the show is one of my favorite parts. And also, when you're a patron, you get to be live for the Pascal Robert Mau Mau Hour. And this one coming up this Wednesday is going to be quite the spicy show. That being said, let me bring in my homie, my dog, my co-host, the man of the Mau Mau Hour. He is the Pascal Robert.
Peace and greetings to the chat. Peace and greetings to the audience. Peace and greetings, Jason Miles.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm looking forward to today's show. Looking forward to the Mau Mau Hour this coming week.
You want to give a little hint on what you're going to be talking about? Or?
The Mau Mau Hour is going to be talking about the conflation or confusion of, often, of white supremacy with capitalism. And how oftentimes we relegate the adverse effects to capitalism that disproportionately plague black and brown communities to the phenomenon of white supremacy.
And don't forget, for patrons that get to watch the Mau Mau Hour live after Pascal,
that is correct,
gives his 2 cents, you guys can call in and respond.
Hopefully it's worth more than 2 cents.
is going to be a 25 cent take?
Well, hopefully more than that.
You get the whole buck. It's the whole buck take.
But I'm looking forward to today's show because we have my good friend and comrade, Dr. Paul McComb, here.
You know what? At this point, I don't want to say I feel bad, but I feel like I am. I like these shows because, for me, it's fun watching you two interact because you guys are friends and two very highly intelligent people interacting. I become a sponge. So I, like the rest of the people watching, I'm just sitting down. Sometimes I'm taking notes, just so you people know. You think I'm bullshitting? Pad and pen, taking notes. So these shows are highly informative. Educational is an understatement. But before we bring in our esteemed guest, let's bring in our fellow co-host. He is formerly the black man in Maine. Now he's one of just so many Negroes in Virginia. He is Marcus of the Left Flank Vets.
Yo, what's up?
Yo, Marcus, let me tell you something. I feel like it's been so long since we've done a Saturday show together. I'm glad to finally actually have you on the screen. I see you out there doing your thing, different people's spots, Naomi Kahn's here and there. You know, you're doing your shots. You got the little Twitch action. What's going on, man? What's going on? You trying to make moves?
Just, I mean, I'm just following in the wake. All right. See, you know, like that's it's like you got to be smart. I'm drafting off of what you and Jason have been doing, you know. And I think like when y'all probably don't answer people's emails, they'll like, hey, can we get the third tier? And it's like, yep, yeah, bring in the lefty, Marcus. But I gotta say, Pascal, that polo, you're looking good. I don't think I've ever seen you wear blue or any type of color than like black or brown.
I have a series of polos that I wear for the show and a couple of long sleeve shirts. Jason doesn't like the purple polo, so I try to avoid wearing the purple polo.
I just don't want you to get confused with Grimace or Barney.
I don't think that'll happen. I also have some work shirts that I like to wear as well. It's a white
shirt. And Davis work shirts? Like you're
like no, like Dickies.
Work shirt. So yeah, Ben Davis Dickies, like you're thugged out.
Those are yo, hey, Dickies are dope.
Deuce here. Like that.
Don't hate. Jason, don't hate.
I gotta see Pascal walking around hot ass Miami dressed like a LA gangster.
okay, I'll say this too. It's like the Dickie shorts. I don't know if they could be beat. Dickie shorts are 10 out of 10.
Yo, Dickies make some quality material, man.
I agree. Jason's a fucking hater.
Nah, man. I have Dickies.
I'm sure you can't be in a heavy metal band and not have some Dickies, man.
I do. Right?
I do. I have skinny Dickies.
It's like before there were skinny jeans, there was the women's dickies. There's the fucking female dickies section.
Yo, we're trying to have a serious intellectual conversation today on this show, and y'all are already off the rails with the comedy, man.
Hey, we got to get the jokes out quick because this is going to be a very serious show. I mean, this show is totally... Just the whole learning about, and I don't know everything. I just learned not too long ago about the history of zombies in horror movies and zombie in Haiti. That kind of messed me up. Like, oh man, I had no idea. And then doing a show for the last 2 years with a Haitian, I can't watch, you know, The Believers anymore.
Yes, because
I can't watch me being the Rainbow.
Gives you some kind of supernatural fear of the capacity of like voodoo cosmology haunting you in your sleep.
Oh, dude, I can't. I'm like, man, Pascal he was the wizard behind the wall. He was like, no, man, all this ain't how we really are. Like, what do you mean? I went to Little Haiti in Miami and I swore I saw the dude from no. This guy's like, no, it's not like that. So he just crushed the whole myth. But let's bring in our guests. Today, our topic will be something that has an extremely racist history here in the West. That is the understanding of Haitian voodoo. I want to try to say it right because Paul McComb says it with the accent. And then I also want to acknowledge that I spelled it incorrectly. So... Anybody, any Haitian academics that want to call us out, that is my American Western bad. I was corrected before the show started by Dr. Paul McComb. So don't come at him sideways saying that he was supporting the block. No, he corrected me first things first. So please welcome. Dr. Paul McComb is a Haitian philosopher and sociologist, the president/CEO of the McCombian Foundation, an assistant professor of sociology and philosophy at West Virginia State University, a social theorist interested in the application of social theory to contemporary issues such as race, class, and capitalism. He is the author of several leather-bound books. He is the Paul C. McComb.
Oh, boy, you guys just clown on this show. What's going on, Pascal? Long time, brother. We speak, but we don't see much these days.
I know, man. We do talk on the phone every now and then, but we haven't seen each other on our show, our panel, in a long, long time, man.
Yeah,
but,
brother. Yeah.
We try to have a little light levity set side on the show when we do our Saturdays.
I enjoy it. I watch every episode, brother.
I'm glad we have to. You know, when you deal with such serious topics, sometimes you need to have a little bit of levity. And you also can't reach the people when you're trying to talk over cats' heads a lot.
Oh, you're right. You see, Pascal got to rein me in all the time. I stay in the philosophical and the physics and the sociology. So, you know.
Well, I will say this. The first time you were on the show, we referenced an academic article you had written about critical race theory. And I believe even in the academic article, you referenced voodoo.
Yes.
And because of that, people that were watching the show had read it and they were kind of fascinated. So a lot of people started to follow you in your work with voodoo.
Yes.
I was talking to you a little bit off air about the movie Serpent in the Rainbow, which is probably that I can think the last very popular movie based in Haiti. They actually shot in Haiti, yes, right after the fall of Baby Doc.
Yes.
And the man that originally wrote the text, Serpent in the Rainbow, wrote the text to dispel all of the negativity around the stereotypes around Haitian people and voodoo and witch doctors and things like that that were coming out from the U.S. occupation. Was it
1915 to 1934.
And a lot of soldiers were coming back telling these crazy tales of, you know, witch doctors and zombies, and those got turned into books, which later got turned into movies. So the horror lore that we get around zombies definitely comes from that U.S. occupation. But
yes,
but that history goes further back and is actually quite sad. If you want to get into that real quick.
I'm glad you brought up the Serpent in the Rainbow, as well as the Wade Davis and what happened to him. In fact, that would be an excellent segue into understanding voodoo. What we call the IT of voodoo, which it just means the branch, the father of voodoo, because voodoo post the earthquake, they started to all of the different what we call lakus. I'm going to use some terminology, but before we get into that, I want to touch upon the political element that you raised, and then we'll get into some of the nuances of voodoo. Prior to the fall of Baby Doc, he actually called what are known as Wongun, which are voodoo priests, and voodoo, and technically voodoo is not a religion. I know I teach a philosophy of religion course, and I go into the fact my students are shocked enough to find out that voodoo is not a religion, but it's a way of life, it's a philosophy, it's an ethos. It's like saying I'm a Buddhist. Therefore, voodoo can be syncretized with other religion. That's why in popular culture, people will want to refer to voodoo as a syncretic religion, but it really isn't. Anyway, so prior to his fall, the late IT of voodoo, he passed away, Max Beauvoir, who a brilliant chemist, he earned his PhD from the Sorbonne. He was a Wongun. Papa Baby Doc called all of the Wonguns, all the voodoo priests, and he asked him, should he leave? Should he, you know, leave the country and leave the presidency? And they began to prognosticate about what was going to happen in voodoo. So the chaos you see in the Serpent in the Rainbow, the voodoo priests prognosticated what would happen. They prognosticated about the Haiti earthquake. They prognosticated about another upcoming catastrophe that will take place in Haiti before Haiti can get back to being the Pearl of the Antilles. So this is an excellent segue into understanding voodoo, because I just mentioned the fact that there was some prognostication that took place amongst the voodoo priests, because epistemologically, and when we say voodoo is not a religion, it is a way of life. It's a philosophy, and all philosophies have four elements. They have what we call an ontology, they have what we call an epistemology, and they have what we call a logic, and then they have an ethics, what we call axiology, which is value theory, which includes ethics and aesthetics. So the reason why they were able to prognosticate, whereas in the West, epistemologically, and epistemology just means how we know what we know and how do we come to know what we know. Whereas the West, the two debates would be between rationalism and idealism. And voodoo, the epistemological basis of voodoo says that we can know via what we call post-materialism, via dreams, via revelations. So the metaphysics of voodoo is tied to its epistemology. And metaphysics, and we're dealing with ontology, it just says what constitutes the world? What is the world made of? In voodoo, the understanding is that God, there is a being called God, and this being created the world out of itself. So voodoo, if I wrote the metaphysics of voodoo down and I gave it to for you to read, compare it to the metaphysics of Shintoism, there is no difference between voodoo and Shintoism and Hinduism. The same metaphysical concepts you find in Shintoism is the original religion of Japan. And so the understanding is that the world is a material world that was created out of a being called Bon Dieu, good God. This being created the universe out of itself, similar to what we find in Hinduism. Mm-hmm. Atman created, we're a product of Atman. Well, voodoo says the same thing. And this being used concepts in mathematics, here's another surprise. My students didn't know there's mathematics in voodoo. This being used mathematics and concepts that we would call loi in voodoo. And if you really understand it, loi, if you really interpret it, all it means is laws. So voodoo, this being used laws, which we call loi, to create this material world that we experience. And we can get to know the essence of this being through these concepts. Now, what the West would do is they would take these laws because of Western, racism. They would say, oh, the African is a primitive being, and therefore they can't understand the concepts of mathematics. So they believe in spirits, animism. So what the West would say is the animism that you would find in voodoo, because in voodoo, every being, because it comes from God, has the essence of God, hence animism. But the West, who would eventually adopt animism, because if you understand contemporary physics, what panpsychism is animism at the end of the day. But anyway, so because God used laws to create the material world out of itself, everything that we see in the material world has God's essence, hence animism. So from there, the metaphysics or the ontology of voodoo would give rise to its epistemology. So how do we know or experience the material world? Well, voodoo says not only do we use reason to experience the material world, the West says that as well, but we can also know, and this is very important, and this is where I use voodoo, and I at the end I will get to that. This is very important because in voodoo, in the West, there is a distinction that the philosopher Immanuel Kant makes between the phenomenal world, which we can know, and the noumenal world, which we cannot know. He makes a distinction in his Critique of Pure Reason between phenomena and noumena. So therefore, the West believes that we can never get, and noumena just refers to the nature of reality as such. Phenomena is the nature of reality as it appears to me. So the West would argue that we can never know, and this is building off Immanuel Kant, we can never know the nature of reality as such, noumena. But Voodoo doesn't say that. Voodoo said we can know epistemologically. Not only can we know phenomena, but we can also know noumena. We can know noumena through revelations, through dreams. In fact, we can use the laws to help us understand how we ought to live. So epistemologically, Voodoo says we can know phenomena and we can know noumena. So when God created the material world, God not only created this material world, but God created several material worlds, and we all participate in these material worlds. So before the rise of the multiverse theory we find in physics, Voodoo says there is a multiverse out there. In fact, each one of us have a counterpart in the material world that resembles the material world that this earth is a part.
Okay.
So there's a multiverse theory in Voodoo.
We gotta call time out.
I knew Paul was looking.
Paul. Look. See, this is what happens when Pascal doesn't give me the heads up that we're gonna start talking about the multiverse.
I got a simple question.
Now, you know, if you watch this show, Paul, you know I loved Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, I know, brother. I know.
So you're going to tell me that right now there's multiverse Bizarro World Jason.
Yes, there is. There's a Jason. In Voodoo, there is. In fact, Jason is reincarnated. In Voodoo, the understanding is Jason is reincarnated 16 times, 8 times as a man and 8 times as a woman.
Is woman Jason hot?
So there's a woman Jason out there.
There's a woman Jason that existed before this Jason.
yo, Paul, you took this in a whole direction that I shouldn't have been surprised that you wanted to go. Early on, when I was going to start with baby steps with simple questions about, can we talk about the cultural
antecedents? Oh, I'm getting there, brother. I'm getting there.
In Africa. Can we talk about the origins in terms of the cosmology?
Oh, I'm getting there, brother. See, everything has to tie in together. You see what I'm saying?
And just if while you're going back into the speech, and if you can just even give the definition, or at least the dividing between what makes a religion, what makes voodoo not a religion.
Okay.
So people have that understanding. So
voodoo. The Voodoo community does not view itself as a religion. What would happen is many Haitian anthropologists, in attempting to institutionalize Voodoo along the lines of Christianity, they would turn Voodoo into a religion. But Voodoo in Haiti is a way of life. Now, when I speak about the metaphysics, the epistemology, and when I get to the logic and the culture of Voodoo, remember, this Voodoo in Africa, the metaphysics covers all of what would become syncretic religions in the West, Obia, Santeria, they all, Shintoism, Hindu, they all share the same metaphysical systems that I'm describing. So the only difference between Santeria, Voodoo, Haitian Voodoo, all stems from what tribe dominated the group of Africans who were taken to wherever they were taken, in Cuba. Santeria is more Yoruba tradition. Haitian Voodoo is a combination of the Yoruba tradition and the Congolese tradition coming out of Central Africa. Majority of the Africans who were taken to Haiti were from that Congo area later on, prior to the revolution. So it is a way of life. It is a philosophy. Voodoo is not a religion. It doesn't say that what Voodoo says is a philosophy. And I subscribe to the anthropological notion by Tyler, which argues that religion is just the first form of science. Even Christianity, Islam, the first form of science. That's my academic description between religion and the cultural way of life. Religion for me was just the first form of science. It tried to explain the nature of reality as such, and how we ought to live within that nature of reality. And Voodoo has all of that. So all religions have a metaphysical system. They have an epistemological system. They have a logic, and they have an ethics, what we call axiology. So we get to the epistemology of Voodoo, and I will try to do a comparison between Voodoo in the West always, so your audience can have a better understanding. So as I was suggesting, Voodoo says we live in a multiverse. Not only can we know the nature of reality as such, but we also know phenomena. So epistemologically, it's distinct from the West in that the West say we can never know noumena. In fact, in physics, there's a contemporary argument that we can't speak about the multiverse because it violates what we call the verification principle. There's no way to verify that there is a multiverse. But Voodoo says there is a means of verification, and that means of verification is a result of dreams, revelation, even though the West early on, if you read Thomas Aquinas, also believed in revelation. But post the Enlightenment period, the West went completely empiricism and rationalism. Voodoo is not only empirical, epistemologically and rational, but it's also post-materialist because it argues you can know through revelation. God can reveal itself through the laws that it used to create the environment. So the logic of Voodoo says God created this multiverse out of itself. So we all, in a Spinozian kind of way, are part of God. So it's pantheistic in the sense that God is everywhere. God is in everything. And it's also animistic, what the West would call animism, but today they want to call it panpsychism, and that spirit or consciousness is in everything. So a rock has consciousness. Dogs have consciousness. Animals have consciousness. We human beings have consciousness. And we human beings are not only, we're not superior to any other form of consciousness that exists. Although the West would say we are superior being because we have reason. Voodoo does not say that. Voodoo say we are no different from any other animal. So epistemologically, Voodoo is a panpsychic way of life. It has, it believes in reincarnation. And as I was mentioning to Jason, in Voodoo, you are reincarnated 16 times, 8 times as a man, 8 times as a woman. And after those 16 incarnated lives, you return back to the essence of God, which created the multiverse out of itself.
Yep. Real quick, out of those 16 reincarnations, mm-hmm. within the multiverse, those are happening concurrently?
No. Voodoo says they happen twice, simultaneously. So you have two lives that occur simultaneously. So there's one Paul that exists. I don't subscribe to that to build my own metaphysical system. When I write on physics, I build on Voodoo and I'll get to that point, how I use Voodoo in my academic work. But yes, they say two lives are lived simultaneously. So you have a dark life that's existing simultaneously with you presently. Somebody had a question.
I wanted to ask is in terms of the actual hierarchy of deities, I don't know if I'm using the improper terminology or loi, or I don't want to say spirit. I think that might be improper terminology also.
Yes.
The forms of being that exist in the Voodoo cosmology and the actual narrative, in other words, the story, the narrative story of the loi, can you talk about what the narrative of the law, for example, we have Ezili, we have Ogu, we have all of these various laws that exist.
I call them concepts in the beginning. The laws are concepts used by God to help him create him or it create the universe.
Right.
So Ezili, go ahead.
I don't want to say Bible-like because that would be, but there is a story arc narrative that exists within Voodoo that discusses how in which the loi involve each other in the story of creation and the narrative of how they were. Can you talk about the story arc of the loi, their relationship to Bonger, and what is their overall story arc?
Okay. So what you have in Voodoo, you have 421 lois or concepts or principles by which God created the material multiverse. So it's 420 spirits or essence or concepts and one God, bon Dieu. So 421. So God used the concept of beauty, which in Vodou is called Ezilifreda. The concept of evil or the concept of wisdom is called Papa Legba. So when voodoo practitioner, and this gets what Pascal is asking is the sociocultural aspect of Vodou, because its metaphysical system, its epistemology would give rise to its ethics and its culture. So what you find in Vodou, you have what's called a peristyle. The community is organized around how the universe was created. So the communities are organized around what was called the Lakou system, L-A-K-O-U. So the Lakou system is a system that reflects the creation, and the concepts of creation are celebrated in the Lakou. So all the principles that Bon Dieu utilized to create the universe are celebrated within the Lakou. The Lakou also tells us how we ought to organize society as well. And I call it a form of libertarian communism. There's a Haitian sociologist, he calls it the counterplantation system. I don't subscribe to that because it comes out of the metaphysical system. So if you look at a Lakou, is structured around the multiverse. So what you have in the Lakou is the Port-au-Biton of what's called the peristyle. Some people want to call the peristyle a church. No, it's not. It's where the community organizes itself to celebrate the concepts of creation. Now, the community is organized around what's called a Wongan or a Mambo. A Wongan is a voodoo priest. A Mambo is a voodoo priestess. Now, there is no bad, and I didn't get to the ethics, there is no bad and good in Vodou. Vodou is about keeping the balance and harmony that the universe was created on within the community. So the aim or the ethics of the Vodou is to maintain balance and harmony between yourself, the society, and nature. So there's no good and evil. So therefore, in Vodou, if you hit me, I have the right to hit you back. That's the only way I can have balance between myself and you. So it Vodou does subscribe to, and this is the basis of the Haitian Revolution. So the metaphysics of Vodou helps us organize the socio-cultural or social relationships you find in Vodou through the 400 concepts that you find. I'm sorry, I misspoke. I said 421. It's 401. So the 400 concepts. Now, in Vodou, you don't die. Nothing, the world was not created out of nothing. Remember, I said in the beginning, the world was created out of God. So therefore, in Vodou, there is no end. There was a being just existed. It was always in existence. And therefore, you do not die at the end of your 16 reincarnated life. You simply go back into the consciousness of the being that created the multiverse. So Vodou organizes social relationships the same way that God organized the world. So in Vodou, the community is organized around quid pro quo, or what we call reciprocity. The intent is to have balance and harmony between those in the community and the environment. And you celebrate the concepts of Vodou that maintains this balance through what's called lois. The lois are the concepts of creation that helps us maintain balance within the community. So in Vodou, you have light, you have darkness. So you have Wongan and you have Balkol. Now, this is very important because this is where we got to get to the zombification issue. Remember, as I mentioned, I keep going back to the fact in Vodou, the metaphysics determines the epistemology and it determines the ethics or how we organize human behavior. In Vodou, sociocultural life is around the Lakou. The Lakou is a community of families, of people who have organized themselves either around, they have a shared common ancestor or through marriage. So you organize the community and everything is shared within the Lakou system. So If I help you build my house, reciprocity said you're supposed to help me build my house. So the intent is to use what we call there's three traditions in Vodou that helps organize the community. We have what's called the Lada tradition, which represent lightness. Remember, there's no good and evil in Vodou. There's no bad or wrong. So you have what's called the lightness, which is the Lada tradition. This tradition helps us maintain balance and harmony within the environment. And it's represented by what we call decent concepts. We won't say good concepts or bad concepts. They're called decent concepts. They're represented by beauty, and the loi for that is Ezili Freda. They're represented by wisdom. The loi for that is Papa Legba. They're represented by agriculture, and the loi for that is Kuzin Zaka. So what we call in the West good concepts are represented by the Lada tradition. They help us maintain balance and harmony between the individual, their community, and the environment. The environment is big in Haitian Vodou. Now, when things go wrong within the community, let's say you do me harm, the only way I can gain justice is I have to go towards darkness. I have to reach out to the dark principles that help. Remember, the aim of Vodou is to maintain balance and harmony. So lightness is juxtaposed against darkness, and that's represented by what we call the Petro tradition of Vodou. Now, and the Petro tradition has its own concepts. For example, Ezili Dun Tall, if someone do me wrong, or if my wife cheats on me or my husband cheats on me, to get revenge, I can reach out to the dark principles, the dark concepts to gain revenge on whoever has done me wrong. And those, the Petro tradition is also represented by its own concept. So for example, during the Haitian Revolution, we always say that the Haitian Revolution started off with a voodoo ceremony at Bois Caiman. And that was what we call a Petro tradition. So therefore they reached out, because slavery represented an imbalance in the community, the Africans reached out to the concepts of darkness to combat the evil that was done to them in slavery. So they called on what Ezili Dun Tall, who is the mother goddess of the Haitian country. And she, the belief among the Africans is that she actually descended from the heavens to help us fight during the Haitian Revolution. Now, so these two traditions helps maintain balance and harmony between the environment and the community. So if you are wrong, you reach out to the Petro tradition. If you're seeking peace and harmony, you reach out to the Lada tradition. Now, there is also voodoo possession. Now, this is very important because we believe that
Dr. McComb. Yes. And before getting into the zombie stuff, I feel like there's an important point that you were kind of making with, you know, I guess the moral standings,
yes,
or lack thereof, mm-hmm. And say that there's no good and bad. There's just imbalances that need to be rectified.
Yes.
I mean, I think in a modern concept, you know, I think this gets to like the policing of how things are protested, or the language used against certain wrongs in society. And then you have this like, oh, well, you're only allowed to use these certain ways. But within Vodou is that concept is completely, you know, just wrong, right? It's the opposite of, like, once there is an imbalance recognized, there is forces used to correct the imbalance.
Yes. And you know, in fact, you need those forces to help stabilize the community. So therefore, there's actually that's where the Balkaw in Vodou comes from. So if you're seeking justice in Vodou, you don't go to a Wongan, a voodoo priest. You go to what's called a Balkaw.
What is, can you define what is the nature and the purpose of the Balkaw?
The Balkaw deals with this is the element that you see on TV about voodoo, the black magic side of voodoo. That's where the Bakal comes from. They believe that you can manipulate the metaphysical plane to remit justice or to rectify injustices. So if you feel that you were wrong, you would not reach out to a Wongong, you would reach out to a Bakal. So the Bakal is there to
point that you brought about that I want to dissect, and also is that one of the things that we have to understand is that when we're dealing, and I think you would agree with me here, is that when we're dealing with the Africans who are brought to the island of Saint-Domingue, these people are coming from different spiritual traditions. Many of them are coming from the Yoruba tradition. Some of them are coming from ancestor worship. Some of them are Muslims. Some of now, when you're seeing these things like ceremony Wakaima, we see this synchronicity where they basically are putting aside their various deviations in spiritual traditions to come to this common goal of alleviating the oppression of their ancestor. And they come to a synchronistic kind of divination, if you will, to use their combined faiths to fight their overall oppressor, which is the plantation system. What I'd like you to talk about is the way in which in the voodoo tradition, elements of this synchronicity exist within or have existed within the voodoo tradition that exists in Haiti, if you can do so, Paul.
There's a big debate currently happening because post the earthquake, the voodoo community has organized itself. What they've done is they've attempted to, what Wade Davis attempted to do, to demystify some of the issues we have in voodoo. One of the big issues is this notion of syncretism that many Westerners want to attribute to voodoo. And this goes all the way back to Melville Herskovitz, the anthropologist. The Haitian deities of voodoo, they are moving away from this notion that voodoo is a synchronistic religion. What happened during slavery, the enslaved Africans would use symbols that parallel their own concepts that they used in Africa to shield or their practice of voodoo from the slave master. So, for example, Papa Legba became associated with Saint Patrick. Ezili Fueda and Ezili Dantal became associated with the Virgin, the Madonna. So, from there, this notion that voodoo is a religion, it uses the saints, but there's a move away from that. For example, one of the issues that they're dealing with is going back to what Pascal Brent referenced, is the ceremony of Wakaima. Voodoo contemporarily, they point to the fact that when Bukman, who was the spiritual leader at the ceremony, addresses the Africans there, he doesn't do it through Islam, even though he himself was a Muslim. He doesn't do it through Islam. He goes back to the voodoo tradition because that's what organized, that's what basically united most the continent, is this what we call the racists call it, an animistic tradition. So he reaches out and he addresses them and says, hey, our spirit, our God is a good God, bon Dieu bon. So he doesn't do it through Islam, although There's an emerging Muslim community in Haiti, in the southern part of Haiti today, who is trying to advocate for a larger role of Bukman in the Islamic tradition in the ceremony. But the voodoo community do not view, their tradition is, their understanding of the ceremony is that he reached out to the ancestors, the calling upon the ancestors, the calling upon God to send Ezili Dantal down from the heavens to assist them in fighting. This is why every leader, every single leader, even the priest, the former priest, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, before they assume power in Haiti, they all visit a peristyle, what we call a peristyle in Haiti. A peristyle is basically a reflection of the universe as constructed by God. And there are several peristyles. There's over 7,000 peristyles in Haiti throughout the country. And every leader goes and visits Paris, especially in what we call the La Tibonite area, which is where Vodou is practiced. Vodou is heavily practiced in the northern part of the country. Now, because Vodou is a philosophy and not a religion, you can be what we call a Vodouisant, a practitioner of Vodou is a Vodouisant. You can be a Vodouisant and still be, for example, a Buddhist and still be a Muslim and still be a, this is why many Africans are able to still practice Vodou and yet still be Christian, whatever. So in that sense, people always want to say it's a syncretic religion, but it's not. It's a philosophical way of life that explains existence and social relations. And I need to get back to the social relation component because Vodou is not only, it's a way of life. So therefore, just like we have a police force here, the Balkals are also the police force in Vodou. They make sure that balance and harmony is maintained in Vodou. And zombification is part of the penal code. It is the death sentence in Vodou. So Vodou believe you cannot take life away. That's another misnomer people have about Vodou. Vodou can be used to kill. No, life is sacred. You are zombified when you violate community principles. Zombification in Vodou, the human being is composed of, and I don't want to sound like Freud, but three aspects of the being. It is four, well, there's more, but four main components of the human being. You have what's called the ka, which is the body. You have what's called the tibonange, which is the essence of life. You have what's called the gwobonange, which is the personality of the individual. And then you have what they call your ancestors who are watching over you. When you are zombified, your gwobonange is removed, your tibonange is removed. The essence of your existence is removed so that you cannot commit any more violations that caused you to be zombified. Is that making sense? So for example, let's say I stole my neighbor's land. And whoever I stole the land from would go and appeal to a Balkal to do me harm for stealing my land in order for me to get balance and harmony. To prevent the thief from ever committing that crime again, his essence is removed, so therefore he does not have the drive. So when you are zombified, your drive for existence is removed from you. And they use and Vodou is not metaphysical. It's a science. So they use the puffer fish. You all are familiar with.
Yeah, it's something from the puffer fish, and. Because
they grind it into a powder.
So in this little doc, man, you know, I was this close, Paul, to trying to send it to you because I don't know if you have Amazon, you know, where you are. In America, it's called Cursed. I'm in Mexico now. It's called Cursed Films. It's a series on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And they did a really interesting thing on Serpent in the Rainbow. Mm-hmm. And the idea that the cast was cursed because some weird things had happened to them. But in the end, they, you know, of course, they realized that because they went deep into the countryside when they filmed.
Yes.
And they were got a special ceremony that was to bless them. And where they felt at first weird things were happening. They really felt at the end of it all that they really were blessed. And at the end, that they all of them felt that if it wasn't for that ceremony, they would have been actually hurt. But in the documentary, Wade Davis actually has some of the powder.
Yes.
And he talks about the puffer fish, the teratoxin. Am I saying it right?
Yes.
Is the most powerful neurotoxin there is, and it's mixed with some other things for spiritual reasons. But there was things that the people found as they were building out sets that were kind of frightening to them. Like they had to dig a hole to film a scene for a a grave. The actor's supposed to fall into a grave. As they're digging the hole, they think there's rocks around them. As you dig a hole, they're like, oh, these aren't rocks. These are bones. Like we're moving bodies. Like they had no idea on how bodies were stacked. There's, you know, if you guys want to get into that, several reasons why there would be bodies stacked so high and accidentally digging
the mask. The sad thing is there's so many myths around voodoo and many of it, they're sociocultural. They're like I was mentioning before, they're part of it is there's the police force in voodoo to protect the society. So for example, there's a concept called Lugawu,
I was going to get into these kind of abstractions.
Lugawu. Those are police force. They're part of. Remember, it's sociocultural, so they're in place. You have Lugawu, you have Sumpwell, werewolves, and there are people who form. They're part of the secret society. Voodoo has a secret society. These secret societies are in place to protect the society from evil or imbalance. So secret societies include Bizango, Sumpwell. Some will argue, there's some anthropologists who argue those are, this is the syncretic part of voodoo because Bizango, for example, the understanding is the Tianos, it was the secret society of the Taino natives of the island, and that was incorporated into the secret society of voodoo. But these secret societies are in place to, because what you have to understand about Haiti, post the revolution, and I think Pascal and I have spoken about this, almost 70% of the population was directly from Africa when the revolution ends. So when Dessalines, who becomes the first emperor of the island, when he was assassinated by Pétion, the mulatto Pétion, many of the Africans retreated into the mountains and the provinces of the island. So what happened is they formed their own community, what we call the Laku system, and they had their own organizational system, their own police force, and all of that stemmed from voodoo. So voodoo is not only a philosophy, it's a way of life, it's sociocultural as well. And what we have, the problem is the West has mystified, many of the mulattoes are guilty of it as well, because they were just as racist as whites. So they viewed everything the Africans did as being primitive. In fact, many of the African leadership of the revolution were looked down upon by, for example, the mulattoes. And for example, you never hear them mention Sanssouci, Makaya, whenever they speak about the heroes of the revolution. The Africans fought, and this is the beauty of the Haitian Revolution. You have three groups of people who are fighting. You have a black bourgeoisie with their own leaders, Toussaint, Dessalines, Christophe. You have the mulattoes with their own interests and their own leadership, Rigaud, Boyer, Pétion. And then you have the Africans, who constituted 70% of the population. They had their own leadership. Makaya, Sanssouci, but that's omitted in Haitian historiography.
That's true. Completely. And also the subsequent class stratification that exists in Haiti reflects this reality. Not only are that 70% of the population tend to be the peasant class that is economically oppressed by the other bourgeois classes, they also tend to be the ones who are more likely to adhere to the voodoo tradition. Yes. One of the things that I wanted to get with Paul is that what is the class nature of voodoo practice in Haitian society? Because contrary to what people would think, not all Haitians ascribe to voodoo as a way of life. And there's a class component to its adherence. You want to talk about that, Paul?
Definitely. So what you would find is voodoo, because of this, as Pascal mentioned, this class stratification that I alluded to, many of the practitioners of voodoo were constituted the peasantry. So what would happen beginning in post the American occupation, many of the Haitian leadership started to incorporate voodoo as part of the tourist trade, even though many of them in Haiti, to be sophisticated and bourgeois, you had to be Catholic. You couldn't be a voodooism because that was looked down upon, that was seen as primitive, backwards, etc. So what post the occupation, what you found was that the leadership, the Haitian leadership, started to incorporate Vodou into the political process as well as into the economic process. So the West wanted to come out and see, because many of the soldiers who returned from the occupation, as Jason alluded to, wrote these horrific, what they call history of Haitian life, Haitian peasant life, and the Vodou tradition. And, you know, that garnered curiosity among the wealthy in the West. So many of them wanted to return to the island to go see the Vodou practitioners. And what the Haitian leadership, beginning with many of the Black bourgeoisie and the mulattoes, what they did was they incorporated Vodou dances, which we would later call folklore, into the Haitian tradition as part of the tourism trade. So now Vodou post-Aristide has garnered a popularity that it didn't have prior to that. In fact, many of the Haitian leadership before the U.S. occupation went around, as the French before them, killing Vodouisant, Wongan, Balkan, Vodou priests. In fact, the leadership of the Haitian Revolution went around murdering many of the Vodou priests. Dessalines massacred many Vodou priests. Part of the issue, he wanted the Africans to be under his leadership, and the only way to do that was to massacre many of the African leadership who were Vodou practitioners. Petion, Boyer, they all massacred and attempted to eliminate Vodou on the island completely among the masses, but that was an impossible task. So post the occupation, the leadership started to utilize Vodou economically into the tourism trade on the island. And so now and even then it still had stigma. So what they did, they cleaned it up by calling it folklore. So they would practice. So many of the dances that you see on YouTube, that you see on Facebook, where you see folkloric dancing, all of that was an attempt to incorporate Vodou into the tourist trade of Haiti.
Do you think it'd be fair to say that the leadership saw Vodou as a branding exercise for Haiti, and not so much, you know, that like
the basically yes, it, absolutely, like just... Margaret, absolutely, yes, it was a way to I guess allay the curiosity of the West. In fact, many under Paul Magloire, who they sent folklore dancers to the U.S. to entice, you know, U.S. Tourists to visit the island. So that's how Vodou became incorporated into the leadership.
There's an aspect here that I want you to touch on as well, Paul, is that how Haitian Vodou becomes, I'll be very frank, a fetish of the Haitian elite in times of external oppression, yes, as a means to try to symbolize a unified Black front, particularly after the U.S. occupation. And this is even demonstrated by the birth of Haitian compa music as well.
Yes,
an attempt to incorporate the African cultural normative behavior of what is considered the peasant class that is normally ostracized, oppressed, exploited, and extracted for labor. But whenever Haitians are being oppressed by external forces, particularly Western or European forces, there is an embrace of this African indigenous force as the authentic Haitian essence in opposition to the forces.
Absolutely. This is mostly done by the intelligentsia. The black bourgeois intelligentsia. Go ahead, Jason. I'm sorry,
Paul. I just want to add real quick. So for patrons, the number should be up. I will post it again, but the phone lines are open. Patrons, if you guys have a question or a comment that you would like to make to Paul or Pascal about this very, very fascinating conversation, the phone lines are open. And M. Toussaint, everybody's favorite Haitian call screener. There's three Haitians on the screen. Toussaint, can you at least say hello? Oh my God, she is so shy. Or did I turn her off? Oh, she's off. She's probably saying hi. Toussaint, can you say hello?
Hello.
Wow. That's all we get?
Hi, Dr. Paul. You're so based.
So we got three. Wait, Paul, are you from New York too?
I grew up in New Jersey, yes. Oh, born in Haiti, God. And grew up in New Jersey.
So there's three East Coast Haitians right now. I'm really hoping the phone lines blow up because never have we had this many. Not since the Fugees have we had this many East Coast.
But Lauren wasn't Haitian.
She's not Haitian. She was from Haiti.
She's Jamaican. Jamaican sister.
Marcus, you knew that. You didn't say nothing.
Nah, I mean, I dropped off of Lauryn Hill a long time ago, so not too interested. But I mean, I'll get, yeah, hell yeah, Lauryn Hill's Jamaican. What are you talking about?
But oh, Pascal is absolutely correct. You know, the intelligentsia class in Haiti, especially the black bourgeois intelligentsia class, not, I won't say so much the mulattoes, because you get people like Jacques Romain, who was a mulatto elite. He was very antagonistic to Vaudou. Even though he said, you know, eventually, because he was a Marxist, eventually he believed that the peasantry would rid themselves of Vaudou. But it's no different from Fanon looking to the peasant class as the revolutionary class, as opposed to the working class, the industrial working class. So they did the same thing in Haiti. Whenever there's any occupation, any sort of antagonism towards the island, you have the intelligent black intelligentsia class who would look to the peasantry and adopt many of their philosophies into their discourse. So now there's this worship of Dessalines, who became Vaudou. Dessalines is actually a loi. He represents a political warrior in Vaudou because right. He was such a political warrior. So he was because he's an ancestor, because when you remember, I said you don't die. So you, after your 16 lives, you're supposed to reincarnate. Dwell in the land of the ancestors. So Dessalines was made a concept, the concept of political warrior. So yeah, the intelligentsia class would adopt many aspects of the only thing that they don't, it's strange. I wrote a piece called The My Nigga Haitian not too long ago, because what happens in the Haitian diaspora, many Haitians, they wave the red and blue flag on May 18th. But that's actually not the flag of Haiti, believe it or not.
The original one, no.
That's not the original flag. And it was never to be adopted. The Vaudou community does not recognize the red, white, and blue flag of Haiti. They recognize the black and red flag of Dessalines. And majority of the black leadership, once they get into power, from Dessalines up until Papa Doc, they would always convert back to the black and red flag.
Right. Well, because what happens is that the Dessalinian project, which starts in 1805, doesn't start in 1805, but is crystallized in 1805 with the Dessalinian Constitution, represents an ideological threat to the petit bourgeois mulatto class that occupies the South and the West. I wouldn't say all mulattoes, because we all know there were many mulattoes who actually coalesced around Dessalines' project. But as we talked about, really what it was is that there was more than just a color schism. It was really a schism rooted in political economy.
Yes,
the economic interests of the South and the West were not rooted in agriculture, but were rooted in international commerce. They did not appreciate the way in which the economic structure of the plantation mercantile system was structured in the northern part of the country around black stewardship of the economy, and they wanted to have a more international free trade economy, which basically helped fundamentally support their design to undermine the Dessalinian project.
And here's an interesting paradox. The fact that while simultaneously embracing Vaudou symbolism whenever any sort of outside antagonism impact the island, they're simultaneously attempting to move the peasantry off of the land into the city to serve as an industrial working force. So
right.
It's very paradoxical. Both the black bourgeoisie, like they say in Vaudou, both the black bourgeoisie as well as the mulatto elites, they hate the peasantry.
Very much so.
Very much so, brother.
Well, let's talk about something very important. And because I know Jason wanted to talk about, can you talk about how the Duvalier regime, particularly Francois Duvalier, Papa Doc particularly, incorporated voodoo cosmology into his politics to try to sway support among the peasantry?
Well, what he did was actually very brilliant, and he's one of the few, people don't give him credit enough for his attempt to remember. In the historiography of Haiti, its political economy, the peasantry has been, and I don't like using the peasantry, the Africans have been basically relegated as a lumping proletariat. They're never involved in the political process or very limited. So post-1915, post the occupation of the island, the Americans were the one, they destabilized, they removed the old, what we call l'armée indigène. This was the original army of Haiti who fought in the revolution.
The indigenous army.
The indigenous army. When the Americans occupied the island, they disbanded that army and constituted their own army in Haiti. And that army basically was to solidify Haiti as a periphery country for the Americans. So all of this leadership post the occupation has been backed by the Americans. What Duvalier did, which was brilliant on his part, he realized he could not dismantle the American-backed army. So what he did was he developed what would be later be called the Tonton Macoute. And the Tonton Macoute were, he incorporated Haitian wound guns into this police force, what he considered a police force, and he allowed them to use voodoo mysticism to basically scare the population to follow his ruling. So he incorporated many of the peasantry into his political apparatus, and in doing so, they serve as a counterbalance against the American-backed Haitian armed forces. He also referred to himself as what we call a Baron Samedi. Now,
Baron Samedi.
Baron Samedi in Vodou is the loi of the dead. Or the Gede. He is the leader of the Gede. Gede are spirits of the dead. In Haiti, it's celebrated November 1st. You all have Valentine's Day. We have what's called Fête Gede.
It's called All Saints Day in Catholicism.
Yeah. In Catholicism, it's called All Saints Day. You all have Halloween here in the West. And what they do is they celebrate the spirits of the dead on November 1st. Well, Baron Samedi is one of the most powerful. They're also used for black magic in Vodou. He's one of the most powerful lois in Vodou. And what Duvalier did was he identified himself with Baron Samedi to put fear into the Haitian peasantry. The late Ati of Vodou says Haitians are, Max Beauvoir, he claims Haitians are very superstitious. So essentially, in incorporating the Wongans into the Tonton Macoute and identifying himself as Baron Samedi, Duvalier was able to garner support from the peasantry. And many Haitians from the peasant class would basically obtain wealth under the Duvalier regime. They constituted a petty bourgeois class.
Let's be frank.
I'm trying not to be, bro.
I think you're being a bit euphemistic. Francois Duvalier incorporated Haitians from the peasant, from the African class, from the what we call the Bosal of the peasant class. He took their authentic spiritual tradition, which was voodoo, and incorporated as a means and weaponized it to terrorize the mulatto elites and bourgeois that would not support what he believed was his black nationalist project, which was a pretext for a hardcore anti-communist politics that was largely about aggrandizing his wealth economically and dislodging economic power and control of the economy from mulatto elites while still subserving the needs and demands of the Arab oligarchs who supported him.
Yes. Yes. And he, and this is why amongst the Black immigrants here in this country, my father's generation, Pascal's father's generation, they still hold Duvalier in high esteem, even though the
some West of them do, not my
many, no, no, but many of them still do because they gain wealth under many of them came from the peasantry.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about let's put the cards on the table, Paul. What is the tradition that the Black Creole leaders of Haiti always do that starts with Duvalier, starts with Estime.
Estime, yes.
With Magua. Because what our audience has to understand, right? In the 20th century, from the time of the U.S. occupation, which starts in 1915 to 1934, the leadership of the Haitian presidency is pretty much in the hands of the fair complexion Haitian aristocracy. Okay. Yes. The Haitian mulatto elite are working as the pawns of the United States during the occupation and basically signing off on the wealth extraction that is being done in the name of Citibank, Wall Street, and the financial mercantile exchanges throughout the world at the detriment of the Haitian people.
And what they did was, not to cut you off, Pascal, remember, they practiced what they call politique de doublé. So they would put a black face.
Good point. La politique de doublé is the methodology that the elite, fair complexion mulatto used in Haiti, where they would take a dark complexion political figure who would claim to have fealty to the agenda of the masses, gain political ascendancy, be used as a pawn by the fair complexion elites, and when he got into position of power, he would betray the black masses and be a pawn of the fair complexion elite. As a matter of fact, my uncle Eric always says that Barack Obama is the first example of the la politique de doublé being implemented in the United States. Yeah. As a matter of fact, but the larger point is that in 1946 we have an election in Haiti of Duvalier Estime. It's literally considered a manifestation of Black power. They call it the Revolution of 1946 because it's the first time that Black people are actually given, it's the Black middle class, of course, it is the Black elite that is given political power and ascendancy in the country. One of the things that happens when Black elites take state apparatus control in Haiti is that they expand the Black middle class by incorporating them into the state apparatus and functioning of government, because the traditional way in which they owned what they maintained wealth, which was owning agriculture, has dissipated as a means of actually generating revenue. Yes, some of them still own plantations, they still own land, but what tends to happen with the rise of technocracy is that the way in which the Black middle class maintains its status in Haiti, starting with post-U.S. occupation, is by dominating the mechanisms of governance in the state and extracting patronage pretty much from the state to maintain their quality of life. And one of the reasons why many people from my father's generation and McCone's generation, not necessarily our individual family members, but people from that generation, have a fetish obsession with the Duvalier, Estime, and Magua names, yes, is that many of their Black elite family members were able to rise into the political apparatuses of governance and maintain a very stable, high quality of life.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Would you say that's similar to what happened in South Africa after?
Yes, a very, very, very similar pattern in South Africa, especially with the ANC. Absolutely.
Yeah, with the ANC, the rise of the ANC and Mandela's being free.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, you can even understand that as the strife between Nelson Mandela and his wife, because he accepted that as the means of structuring the state. to get more blacks into technical power, blah, blah, blah. But Winnie was still very radical.
Well, you have to remember also, right, these are not black folk who, in the Haitian context, these aren't black people who were peasants beforehand. These people had peasants working for them before. Yeah. They were agriculturally. One of the things, and this is
but Duvalier would incorporate some of the peasantry, though.
He would use them more as the Tonto Macoute.
Yes.
One of the things that distinguishes Haiti from other Caribbean islands is that when you talk to people from Jamaica, you talk to people from Trinidad, they will traditionally say, like, yeah, we have elites, but they're always light-skinned, mulatto, or they're always the one. The thing about Haiti is because Haiti has these blacks, like my father's family, who basically fought as generals in the revolution, who maintained their land and property and had peasants working for them, not all of the elites in Haiti who are at the top of the food chain, well, maybe not the top because you always have the kind of oligarchs, but who are high on the food chain, they're not all light-skinned.
Many of them are
blacks, like my father's family, who my father's family could trace their lineage back 200 years. My father grew up having maids, butlers, chauffeurs, all that
stuff. So you're saying the colorism isn't as strong in Haiti? No,
the colorism is used in Haiti, I would say, after the fall of Duvalier, there's a diminishing reliance on colorism in Haiti, even though it's there. But it's not highlighted as much as it was prior to.
What I'm trying to say, Jason, the colorism is strong in Haiti, but there's a class component that breaks through the normal light versus dark narrative that is often used to explain things in Haiti. Because there are black elites that can trace their lineage back to the revolution.
And then what's sad, Jason, is the fact that in Haiti, once you make it as a black person, the aim is to marry a mulatto woman.
That's success. Oh, wow.
That's success in Haiti society.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like it's kind of like the States where
you're a white woman.
So if you guys see with my girl, you know the show's taking off. Just know that, everybody.
The children of Dessalines always want to marry the children of Pétion. So Dessalines is this dark complexion black leader. His kids always want to marry the daughters of Pétion, the light-skinned bourgeois elite. And that actually happens in my father's family.
In fact, you're not considered successful if you don't have a light-skinned or an Arab-looking wife. If you're a dark-skinned person in Haiti, you're deemed, in fact, we have a term for it, Ougon grimel.
My mom is what you would call a grimel.
Yeah.
A fair complexion. A grimel is like fair complexion, but you still got to perm your hair.
Yeah. It's strange. The colorism in Haiti, is, like Pascal mentioned, is tied to the class stratification. And if you look at Haiti, in fact, this is the structure. For as a man, in order to be successful, a dark-skinned man will marry a light-skinned woman. But a light-skinned woman, a light-skinned man is looked down upon if he marries a dark-skinned woman. He's marrying down. So that's the strange component of the racial class structure in Haiti.
I mean, of course, with the influx of American popular culture, the hyper-technological age, and the way in which American media has kind of confused these old traditions, this is not as strictly adhered to as it was when our parents were growing up in Haiti, when it was much more the norm. But now we have a whole different way in which American value systems are permeating society
the island,
that really kind of destroys even any sense of traditional kind of cultural norms, good, bad, or otherwise.
In fact, if you wanted, this is the strange thing that's happening in Haiti contemporarily. When you hear all these gang violence happening in Haiti, if you look at it, the gangs are structured around cities named after the states. So you have, if you go to Cité Soleil, you'll have the gangs from Brooklyn, the gangs from the Bronx, the gangs from South.
Oh, really?
Yeah, brother. Because what happened was during the 90s, under the Clinton and Bush administration, they started deporting many Haitians back to the states if you committed any felonies or anything. So they replicated this the ghetto structure in America. They did that in Haiti. So brother, it's like when you go to Haiti contemporarily, you would think you were in Newark, New Jersey.
Well, okay, we got it. We got our first call of the day, guys. So let's bring this call in. Someone's got a question for you guys. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
What's up? My name is Max. I live in Santa Barbara, California. How you guys doing?
Shout out to the Central Coast. What's going on, Max? What is your question for the panel today? Or comment?
My question is, it's about, you know, that book Racecraft. I'm sure you guys have like brought up before, but wondering if you guys have ever wanted to invite on Barbara Karen Field to the podcast. Join
this. That's a great suggestion.
I think we tried and something happened. I can't remember what happened.
I would love to get Barbara Fields on the show.
Because I think Barbara Fields was Teray's doctorate advisor, and he tried to get her. Something happened. I can't remember what it was.
That's correct.
We definitely tried to make that happen.
All right, I know that's off topic, but I just saw the thing in Patreon to call, and I just wanted to ask.
Oh,
that's
it. Hey.
That's all I got.
All good. Thanks for calling, Max, and I hope the weather is gorgeous out there in Santa Barbara.
Great.
Peace.
Yeah,
I love the Central Coast. Actually, it's funny that he says that because I felt like where this conversation was going when we talk about class stratification. When Ossetar Bear was debating that kid, Haas, he said something about Mugabe being a great leader in Zimbabwe.
Are you serious?
That's a heart attack. Well, because, you know, a lot of these guys, a lot of that guard from the 60s come out of some form of Marx.
Yeah, and but Mugabe was a piece of shit, just like, what's the brother name? Mobutu. They all same lineage, bro. They all... You know, and I tell Pascal this all the time. The brother that I believe everyone needs to read is Frantz Fanon. Fanon had a brilliant critique of post-revolutionary Africa and the Caribbean. And I'm saddened that when you go into Black studies, Fanon is not read more. He should be. All they focus on Du Bois. I'm not a fan. I think Du Bois...
Let me ask you this, Paul, and I'm going to move out of the way because this is going to be a Paul and Pascal back and forth. Pascal Robert, in his blue shirt, believes that sometimes people read too much into Fanon and it has fallen into what we now call Afro-pessimism, some of the works of Fanon.
But Fanon wasn't an Afro-pessimist, nor was he pessimistic.
I would agree with that.
Nor was he pessimistic. If you understand his scholarship and where he's going with his scholarship, remember, he's attacking two schools here. He's attacking the Negritude movement, just like we would the Afrocentric movement. He realizes it's shitty. It's just a Black intelligentsia class who's essentialized the bullshit, the racist tropes that comes out of the West. And he's attacking the need to adopt Western concepts to reconstitute African civilizations. And he was against that. He was against completely siding with adopting a socialist model and adopting a capitalist. He is truly a historical materialist. He's saying, look at the ground. We cannot afford to adopt. In fact, what's brilliant about Fanon is one of the first academics, Black academics, to suggest that Africa has a police force. You see what I'm saying? So, whereas you get people like Du Bois who's pushing a lot of Western concepts, you know, tropes around, Fanon doesn't do that.
I want to ask you a question. You know, it's so funny that you said that. I mean, I know we're digressing a bit from this. I don't think we're digressing because
because you know why I don't think we're digressing? Because what contemporarily, many Haitian academics are attempting to do with Vodou what the Negritude movement did with Black Essentialism. They're essentializing Vodou. Number one, remember I said Vodou is not a religion. They've turned Vodou into a religion. They've reified the Lois as though they're saints that people pray to. It's foolishness. There's none of that in Vodou. So we have to, this is how I use Vodou in my work. Because I use it as a science, I'm able to see where scientifically Vodou gets wrong compared to the West in order to build a new science. You see what I'm saying? Whereas what's going on contemporarily in Haitian studies, they've essentialized Vodou.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question. Ahead, we're actually in this context, and I put a few comments to this point on Twitter today. We have a reality in America, in overall, and we shouldn't racialize this, where Black people traditionally in this country are largely working class and working poor. But the theorization around Black life is done amongst university pedigreed and a Black chattering class is college educated. Is it not safe to say that part of the problem with the way in which we try to implement social and political solutions for Black people in America is that the ideological superstructure that dictates the thought pattern of the Black chattering class, including the university pedigreed, is that it is embourgeoisied?
Yes.
To use your term.
Absolutely. It's
completely divorced from the material reality of the lives of most Black people.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and brother.
Is this not a plague that has plagued Black thought since the 19th century?
Going way back, brother, since the 18th century. Because that's what the race man was. The race man in Black discourse was that man who was able to uproot himself from the material conditions of the working class, the peasant class, inside. Why do we call Booker T. Washington a race man? Because he was able to uplift himself from slavery, no pun intended, and then represent the people as though his way by which he came out is the way that they all should come out. So yes, it is the and this is where we fail to understand how the idea, and this is where I differ from Vivek. Vivek is an orthodox Marxist, and we differ because I still believe that the biggest influencer is the ideological superstructure contemporarily. The education, the Black intelligentsia class has done far more to weaken, to handicap Black folk than any other group, including whites.
I want to get to there. I want to go there, but let's take this super chat. Thanks for this great conversation. Are there many young people in Haiti who are learning the Voodoo tradition and practicing it as well?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What's happening is a rise of Protestantism throughout the country, bro. They're building mega churches around Haiti. In fact, the Voodoo sector is complaining how these churches are entering the island. They're garnishing money from poor people who can't even feed themselves. And, you know, they're praying, they're destroying some of the Haitian monuments. Bois Caiman, these pastors are going to Bois Caiman. They've cut down trees because the environment is very important in Vodou. Trees represent life in Vodou. And many of these Protestant pastors, they're going around the country cutting down these trees, the Mapu trees in Haiti. Because it's sad. Even in the West, post-Aristide, majority of the Haitians, what we would call boat people, what the West would call boat people, who would arrive in America, they came from this Protestant indoctrinated group. And so therefore, they have a disdain for Haitian Vodou. You mentioned Vodou to a young person now, and then the first thing they think about is zombification. Vodou is bad. I'm a Christian. So Christianity is running rampant in Haiti. There was a saying back in the day, you know, Haitians are 90% Catholic, 99% Catholic and 1% Vodou. Now the Protestant sects have taken over the island.
Completely. So you were talking about something that was very important about in terms of how and with the ways in which Black intelligentsia are doing more harm with the educational systems than anything. Well, don't you think that dismay that belies the way in which people say that white supremacy is the actual place in which the focus should be on, and that concentrating on the ways in which black collaborators or the black petite bourgeoisie helps to facilitate the exploitation of the black masses is wrongheaded, and how focusing on white supremacy should be the issue overall instead of talking about how these collaborators coalesce with the system? How do you respond to that?
Well, no, I agree. The problem is, as quote unquote race men and women speaking for the masses, they need a job. So it becomes an occupation to stand in front of white supremacy asking for handouts. And I, you know, that's one of the things that your show does a great job of highlighting, how there is I don't want to come off cynical, but you know, these people are paid to keep the masses silent. Everything is about white supremacy. They don't want to highlight the class structure in Black America. They don't want it, brother. It's so bad, it's worse in academia. The minute, I remember I wrote a book on Haiti called The Voodoo Ethic and the Spirit of Communism. And it was reviewed by one of these Afrocentric people, Malifi Asante, one of these accolades of Malifi Asante. And she said, in her review, she pointed out the fact that I sound like Fanon. I don't emphasize race. I just want to focus on class. I don't care about race. I really don't. For me, and I know you want to use race as a heuristic tool. I don't even want to do that, bruh, to be honest with you. I don't even want to do that.
No, my position is that race has a consequence in a racialized capitalist system.
I don't even look at it like that, brother. I understand.
You're saying racial capitalism, Pascal?
No. I'm not an advocate of using racial capitalism.
It sounded to me like you said racial capitalism.
No, I said race has a consequence in a racialized capitalism.
He used it as an adjective. But nah, I don't even want to use it like that, brother. Especially for me. It's a non-entity, you know what I'm saying?
Are you going to deny that there's a disproportionality in the way in which black and brown people are rendered to lumpen proletariat status in
American capital? I don't deny that, but I don't. It's you know what? For me, it's as how they view the primitive nature of black folk. Is it that black people were primitive, or is it the material conditions of slavery gave rise to the primitive nature that whites highlighted about black folk? Well, it's the same argument with the lumping proletariat, the lumping of black and brown people. Is it because they're black and brown that they constitute the lumping proletariat? Or is it the material conditions and the fact that the material conditions that they inhabited led to them being part of the lumping proletariat? You see what I'm saying? It's like a chicken and egg issue for me. So I don't look at it as race as the locus of causality, more so than material conditions.
No. Here's where I agree with causality. This is what now, if you want to get to the cause of the matter, I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. Race is not the locus of causality. The locus of causality is capitalism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's make this clear. Yeah. Race is only a proxy for creating an economic strata that can be easily exploited. Period.
Yeah, because of
somatic dislocation. In other words, it's easier to turn these Negroes into labor than
they
distinguish themselves from everyone who's white. It's not because there's nothing special or magical about race at all, cultural or otherwise. Race serves a utility because somatically it makes it easier to relegate an exploitable labor source.
It's funny you say that, because that is one of the critiques of Jean-Paul Sartre against Frantz Fanon, because Fanon made the argument that, like you, using race as a heuristic tool to get to the universal. He gets into this Hegelian dialectical argument about the particular race can lead to the universal and hence a new humanism. Whereas Jean-Paul Sartre said, no, there's no way race or class, I'm sorry, race or gender or age or any of these intersectional foolishness can ever lead to the universal and lead to a new humanism. And this is where I side with Jean-Paul Sartre. All that intersectional foolishness that comes out of postmodernism, post-structuralism, it's foolishness. There's no way those concepts can lead by themselves. That's why I wrote this, the new paper, Feminine Patriarchy. Because at the end of the day, what do you get, Pascal? You get white liberal women wanting to be like men in power position.
Well, what happens?
Well, hold on. We have a call. Hold on before you guys get us all canceled. Hold on. Canceling Negroes. The caller hung up. He hung up. Caller down. So I'm sorry. Go back to making
but
sure.
Bro. So that's why I don't side with any of these intersectional folks talking about gender, fighting,
What ends up being the remedy when you use it? First of all, the problem that we have with intersectionality is that the argument of intersectionality requires that the exploitation maintain permanence.
It's a hinge
upon not challenging the oppression, because the benefits that come from fighting the oppression are what gives legitimacy to the oppressed groups. So, in other words, you have to have the oppression
to be there permanently.
Absolutely. And it has to be permanent.
Yes.
So it creates this tautology of oppression that validates all those who are saying, I'm in X group this and I'm X group that. And what becomes the remedy? To enter into the system of oppression and replicate the position of the one who is the quote unquote oppressor, which is the white male.
Absolutely.
Which is, as you talk about so eloquently, equality.
Well, hold on. The caller's called back. We got multiple callers. Let's get through these callers real quick. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
All right. This is Arlo. I'm calling from Seattle.
What's up, Arlo? What is your question and or comment?
Yeah, well, I mean, so thank you so much for this discussion. I've only read like half of one book by Frantz Fanon, and this is making me feel like I need to go back and finish that and keep going. So I just everything y'all are saying is so enlightening. So last year there was a book that came out by Caitlin Greenidge. I don't know if y'all are familiar with the author. It was called Liberty. Mm-hmm. It only came out with one book before, but the main character spends a lot of time in Haiti in like the second half of the book, and I'm wondering what y'all's thoughts are if you've read it on the depiction of Haitian society. And again, thanks so much.
I'm familiar with the book.
Oh, thank you for the call, Arlo. Peace out.
Go ahead. I think there was another caller, Jason.
Well, let's address this call first, and then we can get to the next caller.
Oh yeah. No, many of the books written, especially written by journalists, I have a problem with when they write books on Haiti. They end up depicting many of the racial tropes that come out of the island, or they're written with a God complex. I'm writing because I can save Haiti by highlighting what's happening in Haiti. You know, that's the issue I have with many of the books written on Haiti.
Pascal, did you want to address it?
Would you say white saviorism is a bit of a problem?
Yeah, brother.
Sudeep,
brother, you need to coin somebody. You need to patent some of these sayings, brother.
Sudeep is up in here tonight.
Sudeep is
heavy in the chat.
We have another call. And let's see who this is. Uh-oh. Because I can see a little bit of what they want to talk about. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Omar. I'm calling from Boston. What's going on?
Peace, Omar.
What is your question and or comment, Omar?
Yeah, this is super random. So, like, right now I'm currently reading Black Bolshevik by Harry Haywood. And I'm curious what, you know, the panel thinks of the Black Belt thesis and how that relates to racial capitalism at all. So, yeah.
Definitely set it off, Omar. Thank you for the call, brother. You're about to get some words, but get ready for this one. Thanks for the call, Omar.
Man, Black
Belt. All right, peace.
Listen, I think that the Black Belt thesis was a generous concession by the Soviets to attempt to respect sovereignty amongst Black people in America, and believing that the racist, segregationist state of the South was so offensive that it would be logical for Black people to have dominion and control of their own autonomy, and that they were being sensitive to the Black nationalist traditions that had historically emanated from Black political thought in acquiescing to the Black Belt thesis. As a practical politics, I think that the Black Belt thesis is folly. How are you exactly going to extract whole states from the United States and give them over to Black people for dominion and control? What kind of revolutionary capacity do you have to take them? For those who don't know, the Black Belt thesis was the thesis that came out of the early Soviet Union, that Black people would be allocated a certain number of states in the South for them to maintain dominion and control over, under a kind of Marxist-Leninist type of political structure. I think that it is kind of romantic as a notion. I understand that there have been politics that have developed around it. The Republic of New Africa, for example, the Jackson Cooperative that we have today. I am not one that is romantic on the Black Belt thesis of Black nation state autonomy within the confines of the United States. I like to hear what Paul thinks.
No, I think that whole thesis is dead now. There's this move towards assimilation in American society that's being pushed heavily. So for me, I'm with you. I don't give it much credence. I understand why it emerged, how it emerged, but I don't give it much credence, especially contemporarily. It's absurd to even think about it now. You mentioned communism to any Black folk now, and they think you're crazy.
Oh, you're one of the bad guys in the...
Oh, brother, man. And I mind you, I was trained as a structural Marxist, so that's every time I write anything, they want to, you sound like Fanon. You don't want to talk about race. Race is very important. We want to move away from class, communism, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, wow. We can't sell any of these books when you have a materialist understanding.
Oh, no, incite. No, brother.
Well, I mean, that was my whole reason to want to do the video essay about the LA riots and even talk about that time, because I think we're still stuck in that discourse around all problems that we have in this country are the savagery of white men. And sadly, that shooting in Buffalo reinforces for a lot of people that idea.
Yes, yeah.
And what's even more sad is when the Buffalo shooting happens, there's another shooting that happens not too far from me in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like the news didn't know how to cover it.
Yeah.
Because it was an Asian man that shot up an Asian church.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while the story was, he was part of the PRC and he wanted to shoot these Taiwanese people. It's politically motivated. They found out the man was Taiwanese, and it's like, well, that's not going to work. So
back to it Buffalo. Doesn't sell. It can't sell.
We know how to sell Buffalo. That's easy. We can sell Buffalo all day, every day, because it's a conversation that has no end.
And then the hypocrisy behind that, Jason, is the fact that they don't show, that America is supporting the Azov Battalion, the same group that this white dude up in Buffalo, they share the same philosophy. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Ukraine is beautiful, great, but they don't tell you that Ukraine is a bunch of Nazis and fascists that America has supported for the past 14 years. You see what I'm saying? And yet Biden will get up there and give a speech. Oh, yeah, we dismiss white supremacy, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but you're funding $40, $70 billion to a white supremacist government. It doesn't make it backed by white supremacy.
It's just a different white supremacy with the Russian accent. That's all.
Well, you probably someone asked me. I tweeted out that black Jacobins was garbage recently. I would love you to tackle that. Pascal tweeted out Black Jacobins is garbage recently. Can you talk about why and recommend a better book about the Haitian Revolution? Came late. Sorry.
I always recommend Avengers of the New World. Black Jacobins like you is completely distorted the Haitian Revolution, because it builds on the liberalism. And you got to understand, CLR James is a Marxist, an Orthodox Marxist, writing the history of Haiti and trying to fit the Haitian history within not a historical materialist understanding, but this orthodox Marxist view that praises Toussaint Louverture as the savior of Haiti. And Toussaint, was a piece of shit. Toussaint, he was a slave. He reinstituted the slave trade. And CLR James does not deal with that at all. He doesn't deal with his constitution, how his constitution was written by the former planter class, and he wanted to reproduce the plantation system and call it a corvée system. Mm-hmm. And because CLR James is an orthodox Marxist, he really doesn't know how to handle that. So he basically deals with it by focusing on Toussaint as the liberator, the great liberal liberator of Haiti. Also,
I would make the argument that CLR James is looking at the Haitian Revolution from the eyes of his frustration with the Soviet Union from the failure of great revolutions, and he's making a metaphor between Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Stalin in terms of being some kind of extremely violent authoritarian without understanding the political economy. He completely
distorts Dessalines' impact on the revolution. Completely distorts Dessalines' impact. And he omits the African role during the whole process. So you don't really get a great account of the revolution. So I always cite Avengers of the New World by Dubois, who builds his philosophy on Jean Casimir's work. And Casimir, even though I don't agree with him calling the African tradition the counter-plantation system, but it's an attempt to incorporate how the Haitian Revolution and Dessalines' position is a response to the class stratification and the different economic system on the island. And CLR James does not do a great job. It's more, for me, it's more polemical and propaganda than it is a great historical text.
Well, let's get to the last. Oh, there's a couple more callers. Hold on 1 second. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Bradley, and I'm calling from Austin.
Shout out to Austin. Hopefully, if all goes well, we'll be there at some point later in the year. So let's cross our fingers and hope for the best.
Oh, right on. Fantastic. Are you guys doing a live show or something? Mm-hmm. Cool. So I had a question, and I didn't have the benefit of hearing that last call, so I don't know where the conversation is right now. But I've been listening to you guys for about a year and a half. You guys have been very useful to me in trying to do some of the organizing work that I've done. But I am kind of locked in a suburban locale, even though I have, kind of socialist politics. And, after the George Floyd protests kicked off, there were a lot of, suburban liberals who were actually pretty mad about the police in Austin. I don't know if you saw the news, we were able to push the city council to do various things with respect to police funding. I was doing my best to sort of organize those folks into better politics, along the lines of what Pascal has been talking about for an extended period of time, kind of nudging people in a direction to understand class in a different kind of way. Mm-hmm. But my question was, down at that organizing level, if y'all have any thoughts about how the professional managerial class, black professional managerial class and white professional managerial class relate to each other. Because, we've heard a lot about how the black PMC relates to black workers. But I found a real difficulty in terms of, trying to present class politics in this group with the few black PMC members that we had, sort of in some ways
because they want to talk about the racism
running
of
people
because a white person said, "Can I touch your hair, Aaron?" And then they were like, "Oh my God, I feel the pain of
it." Yeah, yeah, you know the set of issues that that kind of yeah. Whereas the left, I was trying to expose them to, had been engaged in trying to get housing for homeless people and the the efforts around reducing police funding and I'm sorry, my 3-year-old too. So I might have to take this offline, but yeah, that's the basic question.
Okay. Hey, thank you for your call. And it's all good if the kids are in the background, man. That's just real life. So thank you.
Okay. Well, I might just mute and see how far I can get.
Okay.
So, and I'd be happy to provide any more context.
Okay. I think the position I would make
before you go, Pascal, I want to piggyback off his question because I've been meaning to ask you and Jason the same question because by nature, I'm very pessimistic. I don't think any sort of organization or organizing can salvage us or save us from what we're contemporarily facing, especially when you take into account climate change. Because what people fail to realize, Marx and Adam Smith, they don't take the environment into account in their theorizing. And I believe what we're doing contemporarily, the professional managerial class and all this organizing that people are pushing for, I don't believe they take into the environment what we're facing as a species, what the planet is facing. And when they come up with any sort of means to salvage what we're going through, what we're facing, we're not only facing a worker problem, we're also facing a climate and a pollution problem. And I don't think contemporary organizing in America in the quote unquote first world takes that into account, to be honest.
First of all, I think you're absolutely correct, Paul. And I think that one of the main reasons that is that we live in a world in which our organizing is really subsidized by capital and real world capital. And that none of us are really seriously, ourselves included, serious about doing what necessarily has to be done to change the worldview of working class people in addressing climate problems, the problems of capitalism, neoliberalism, food shortages, and all other types of problems that we're facing in this society, because we're basically confined by these golden handcuffs of these NGOs that we all work out of, or our donor base, whether we're podcasts or anything else, and we're not really serious about trying to basically get a gym, get some working class people together, and talk about what are their political needs and demands. Not to overly simplify what needs to be done, but none of us are really motivated to try to find the creative ways necessary to organize working class black and brown folk, even working class white folk included, around the politics that are addressing the moment of this day. Either we think they're too stupid to understand, or we're too afraid to deal with them because we don't think that they have our niche class interests.
Can I add something else to this question? And I think this is what the gentleman is getting at. When you have a room that is a cross class coalition of people, right? So if you actually have black PMC and black poor and working class in the same room, there is the idea of collective black identity now, because we listen to the same music, maybe we have similar hairstyles or clothes, we know about the same beauty shop. All of a sudden, this means that there's now a collective identity. And callers, stop me if I'm wrong here. When you're trying to organize around certain class issues, the PMC cats may talk a little louder or may feel that their opinions or problems are a lot more pressing or important because they're doing it for the culture, aka their success is all of our success.
But Jason, you know what? I'm glad you say that, because this was the brilliance of the Bernie Sanders campaign. And it was also paradoxically his downfall. Bernie refused to talk openly about race. His whole emphasis was on free health care, free college education. But his failure to address quote unquote racial issues brought about his downfall. And that's how Obama was able to get all them other idiots to drop out of the race and then pull this bum that we have in office now, because he highlighted race. Because look what happened after Carolina. It was the black managerial class and the black working class that pushed the Biden over to the nomination. And the problem with this quote unquote black identity and it's the fact that it won't salvage us from what we're facing. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And I don't know in your circle, but contemporarily in academia, what's happening is now they're viewing Russia, China, and the BRIC nations and what Russia has done as a counter-hegemonic movement that will salvage us from the impending doom that we're facing. And it's bullshit. You see what I'm saying?
I mean, Paul, I'll make the argument that racial theorization integration and post-civil rights becomes futile because the terms upon which it is made, i.e. demanding the end of discrimination, becomes legally met, and because it's never confronted the problem of capital and class, there never is an actual infusion of language into racial discourse to deal with the problems of the neoliberal 50-year counter-revolution.
Absolutely.
Well, I think our caller wants to add something. Can you hear us?
Oh, yeah, I can definitely hear y'all. I just wanted to kind of answer your question, Jason. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I'm actually asking about organizing rooms that really do not include working class people of any kind. So you basically have your resistance liberals, who have been mad about the police like beating people at a protest, right?
But they're not the ones.
That's this room.
Well, me personally, I'll tell you. Look, yeah. Me personally, I get a little offended when people.
Well, I would just say that they were. It was a multiracial PMC room.
Gotcha. What I mean. There's something about people that really don't suffer police abuses, and even if they do get pulled over by police, they're never going to get fucked with the way police know how to fuck with people. And I say this all the time. Rodney King was going to get his ass whooped that night because Rodney King could get his ass whooped that night.
Absolutely.
He was a dude that had warrant, just like George Floyd could get his ass whooped that day. He had warrants. He was a transient. Who gives a shit? I'm being honest. That's what it's like. I've drove around for a long time until somebody was real nice to help me out with no insurance. If I get pulled over with no insurance, I'm going to get fucked with because they know I ain't got no money. And I ain't kidding.
The sad thing, Jason, you get fucked with by both black and white police officers.
All day long. All day long. You think Skip Gates getting mildly fucked with is the same thing as me getting mildly fucked with? It's very different.
Very different, brother.
Skip Gates can hand them a card and they go, uh-oh, I'm sorry.
And have a beer with the president.
Yeah, and have a beer with the president. I can't have a beer with the president of the Homeowners Association. So I'm getting fucked with on a whole nother level. And when these cats see the images, they internalize it as a collective black strike.
Yes, yes.
And it's so frustrating. And they go, I had to talk to my son. What are you talking to your son about? Shut up. I've never told my son, hey, when the cop, because he knows.
Hey, I'm going to repeat something John Maynard Keynes said. We're all dead. We just don't know it yet, brother. That's the bottom line, man. I don't see, and I'm not saying that because I don't want to sound like one of these Afro-pessimist people. But in terms of class, in terms of climate, in terms of what we're facing, brother, boy, sometimes I wish I could just go crawl in the closet somewhere because it's
collapse.
This nature unforgiving, brother. It's unforgiving.
We are in collapse. We are in collapse.
Yes, absolutely.
There's no sign that says collapse approaching. We are in it.
We're, boy. Well. Why do you think the wealthy are flying out of space trying to reach Mars?
No, that 300% increase of Americans trying to get passports to live in another country.
Brother, my wife and I bought a piece of property in the DR of all places. I'm trying to get out of here.
Yeah, okay. Let me I got to do some technical stuff on the back end. Caller, do we address your do you do you uh Did we address your issue? I'm sorry if we got a little heated.
No, that's fine. I think you did. You know, what I just observed is basically, you know, there's this real, like, you know, I don't know how to describe it, you know. The message sent by the Black PMCs in our group was essentially shut up and listen to, you know, to a lot of people. And I was sort of prepared for it because I had actually been involved in the movement a little bit before that. So that didn't bother me personally. But the effect it had on, like, kind of the white PMCs who were kind of pissed off and ready to do something was kind of like, well, okay, well, I guess I better shut up and, like, you know, go read a couple of books. And so it kind of sapped the energy in that.
Did they try to say some people. Silly shit like you don't understand because you're white?
Yeah, I mean, there was, you know, I mean, it's all stuff where, yeah, and I'm not going to, like, overwork it. It's not like, but yeah, that's essentially what it was. But I think to people who are just coming to the movement, that was sort of like, it provided a, you know, an excuse to say, oh, well, I guess I got more learning to do. So, you know, I'm not going to call my city council member or pay much more attention to this now.
Depending on where you stay. And I actually, for those new to the show, I lived with a white, family that is somewhat conservative and very Christian. And the father of the family, when he was a younger man, would tell stories about the police fucking with him all the time. And as he got a little older, he kind of chilled towards law enforcement, but he definitely understood that law enforcement fucks with poor people. Because when he didn't really have that much and he was out doing what all of us do and we don't have that much, just chilling, he got fucked with all the time. Mm-hmm. And in my travels throughout this country, especially in the heartland of it, I found myself in a lot of neighborhoods where everybody's white. They still hated the police. You go to West Virginia, you're going to be in an all-white neighborhood. And they're going to say, F the police, just like you was in an NWA video. So is it really just because you're white? It's not like you go to Idaho and all the cops are smiling because they're like, man, this is wonderful because everybody here is just white as hell and we don't have any crime. This is not how it works. There's a function for law enforcement, and it's to police poverty.
Absolutely.
And if you miss that and you make it simply about race, then it's like, well, you're kind of missing the whole point. You know, go ask Eula Love's family if it's strictly about race, because it was a black cop as well as a white cop. She got the Rainbow Coalition of police murders for not paying a $20 bill in 1979. You know, so I get what people are saying to a certain point, but a lot of police forces, especially where I'm from in the Bay Area, there's tons of people of color in the police force, because where else can you walk in the door, start at six figures, and have a union job with benefits?
That's right. I think that's so important. So, and I don't know if you saw the story about the Texas National Guard trying to unionize or some efforts to that effect. Very exciting if that's true.
Well, thank you for your call. We have one more call we want to get to before we call it a day, because Pascal and Dr. Paul have to go do family shit. So thank you guys.
Thank you all. Very valuable work you do.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that.
Okay, let's take this last call, guys. And oh, did he hang up? Oh, there we go. Caller, what is your name and where are you calling from?
This is Matt from NC.
From NC. Okay, caller. From North Carolina.
North Kakalaki.
What is your comment and or question?
Are we still there?
I think he's still here. There's a delay. Oh, we lost him.
Oh.
Here, let me try to call him back. Let's see if I can get him back.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 919.
Well, Matt, try to give us a call back, and I will. Oh, let me see if we got him. I think we got him. There you go. Matt, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry about that.
Awesome. What is your question and or comment?
Yeah, this is for Dr. Paul and for Pascal as well. Mm-hmm. I guess just I don't want to get anyone canceled here, but I mean, talking about voodoo, what do you guys think is the relation between drugs, I guess, and human consciousness, as well as in terms of, you know, the goal of communism to create a different person?
Can you turn your your device down, yeah, Matt? You listen to the show on, so there's an echo. Can you turn your device down?
Oh yeah, sorry about that.
Okay.
Probably got feedback. Yeah, no. Anyways, I don't know if you guys got my question there, but
can you repeat that?
Sorry.
It's all good.
Yeah, no. Just what do you guys think specifically towards? I don't know if you've had any experience with EMT. Just the experience relation between drugs and voodoo and communism.
Drugs, voodoo, that's it. Paul, I'm going to defer to you on that one.
there are many drugs. There are many drugs used in voodoo to enhance the embodiment, the experience of voodoo. But because we do believe in spirit possession, ancestor possession, as well as possession from beings from the multiverse, Jason. but it's usually through drumming. Jason, you're a big heavy metal, but there's studies being done on the correlation between drum beats and Haitian voodoo and the experience on consciousness. My work, I focus on using Haitian metaphysics to understand the origins of consciousness contemporarily, and I tie that to physics. For me, consciousness, the brain facilitates consciousness and does not generate consciousness. So therefore, just like drugs can have an impact on consciousness, so I believe that the brain impacts consciousness. In terms of communism and voodoo, what I do in my writing, I pull out the socio-cultural arrangements of the Lakou system that stems out of voodoo and how it gave rise to a form of libertarian communism. Pascal calls it anarchy, but I call it because that's what the Africans wanted to institute on the island post the revolution. So that's what I use to highlight a form of libertarian communism. In fact, I think once a person in your chat highlighted the fact that I use that to constitute a new humanism, and this is my tie to Fanon. And I argue the only way we can salvage humanity and what we're the current crisis we're facing is through agricultural production and through the Lakou system, establishing the Lakou system at the nation state level. And I highlight subsistence living, which is what's highlighted in the Lakou system of Haiti. So that's how I use that, and that's the connection I make between communism, Haiti, and Salvin Fanon's new humanism.
I'm going to diverse.
That's pretty much exactly what I wanted. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you so much for your call.
No, sorry if I fumbled the bag. I mean, that was a hard one to try to figure out how to word. So had to
You're good.
You're good. You're good. Thank you. Hey, thank you so much for the call and have a good rest of your weekend, brother.
You guys too. Thank you so much for what you do. These are probably some of the most important talks happening. So thanks a lot.
Hey, we appreciate that. You give me goosebumps. So you know what? There was a person that was actually trying to get the number to call in because we did this for patrons only. And I think they did a big super chat and we were trying to get them the number to call in. So if that person, I think they did a large super chat. So Toussaint, if they get back to you on Discord, let me know and I'll give them a patron membership for the year, and they can definitely call in whenever they want to from then on.
Pascal, you didn't tell me Toussaint was a big fan of 2 Cent.
she has family lineage.
Okay. I tell her I apologize.
She's right there. You can talk to her. She's just hiding her face.
Sister, I apologize for calling 2 Cent a piece of shit.
You want to defend your lineage? Toussaint, you want to defend your lineage?
I'm sorry.
Because it's not just one. It's also Pascal.
We can't have any Haitian infighting, by the way.
No. He played his role. You know, you got to give him props. I give him some props. You got tremendous lineage. He fought. He was a fighter.
No comment.
somebody said invite Alex Jones on. It's like, why would you want us to do that?
We're having such a chill vibe, and someone's like, invite Alex Jones.
No, like that would be like, I'd rather punch myself in the nuts.
You know who would be a great guest for you all? What's the young journalist from? I think he's from the Gray Zone. What is his name? You know who I'm talking about, Pascal?
You know what, Ben Norton?
Yes.
That would be interesting. That would be
very interesting. I would love to see his interaction with you all. He's sharp. I like Ben.
That would be interesting.
I'll be off for 2 weeks, so you guys can invite whoever you want.
On that note.
Someone said Glenn Greenwald. I think Glenn Greenwald would get along with us very well.
Glenn likes our show. He's sweet as hell.
Yeah, I think he would get along very well. And then he'd say something mean about Pascal 2 weeks later. She said, invite Trump. I'd rather have Donald Trump because he's just so ridiculous. That would just be the most fun talk to a ridiculous man.
Hey, bro, you know, during quarantine, that was like my dessert. I would just listen to his press conference. Bro, yo, my wife would get mad, but I enjoy just the fuckery.
He is so fucking, like, just doesn't care the shit that comes out of his mouth, man.
But now I can't even follow the one we got in the office now. But at least they gave us a lesbian Haitian sister to sound stupid when they ask her questions about the economy. So.
Yeah, I got an article working on about her.
Oh, my God, brother. Man. And you got Haitians celebrating the sister, and I just want to... Oh, God. Toussaint, I hope you're not related to that sister. Jesus Christ. Man. Oh, my God. I just, God.
Dude, see, if why, we could get Trump. You know what I want to do? If anybody really wants to do this, if anyone's listening and is bold, because people, I'm surprised, but like, I reached out to so-and-so and they want to come on the show. If they lied and said we were like right wingers and we could get Trump on the show, I would love to have Donald Trump on the show, because I would just sit there and fuck with him the whole time, because he's so like Paul says, it's like dessert.
Yo, bro, him talk, I promise
he's
you.
Just gonna give you gems because he's so ridiculous.
But you know what? Believe it or not, I had hope for him when he got in the office, because I saw brother, because I thought it's either he's going to get assassinated by the deep state because he's going to do some dumb shit, or, you know, he's going to really do dumb shit that pissed them off. I really did. But he started to, but then they reined him in. So I was like, oh, God.
Geez. Yeah, when he started to go against the deep state and call out the CIA. I can see why people had hope, because he's such the anti.
He's an outsider, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So he had no clue what he was doing, none, what he was saying, what he was doing. So I was like, yeah, he might fuck shit up. Let him go.
I mean, he fucked shit up all right, but not in the way he hoped to. But thank you, guys. Thank you, Dr. Paul, for hanging out.
No problem. Anytime, brother.
Paul, we got to have you on again. We got to set up that conversation about E. Franklin Frazier versus Herskowitz. We got to find someone to play that Herskowitz role.
Oh, yeah. You know, E. Franklin Frazier's my boy. I love him.
I know. I've got a ton of E. Franklin Frazier's books out here.
Second to Fanon.
Say that out loud. You don't have to write it. You can say it out loud.
What did she say?
I think it's Dr. Lou. She wants us to get Dr. Lou on the show.
Yeah. Dr. Lou think we got a tag team against him, bro.
Yeah.
Is it that serious? Like,
I think they all know each other.
He's a friend of
ours. We do. We're good. In fact, I did his show.
Because he's like churchy, right?
Yeah, he's a pastor.
There you go.
Yeah, he's a kumbaya kind of guy, so he's not as combative. Yeah,
very, very, very chill brother.
Somebody says the elite captain guy, I think, would be an interesting convo.
I want to see those fireworks. Yeah.
You guys really want me to just punch myself in the nuts for an hour and a half, don't you? Okay. Well, enough of this. Just reading that is making my soul hurt. So thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We will definitely be back Tuesday. Our guest can't make it, so I have to put a show together, and I'm kind of excited.
I'll be on Tuesday then.
So we might be talking to hip-hop journalist Justin Hunt about a new piece he wrote about one of Pascal's favorite rappers, the Notorious B.I.G.
Okay.
I'm a okay man.
So that might be an interesting one. So thank you guys very much for watching, and we are out.